If you want to be encouraged tonight about how great our Jesus is and the great work that he's doing around the world. Our problem is in Wales, we're from a small nation, and I used to almost want to slit my throat at some ministers' fraternals because you'd always hear, oh, it's a day of small things, so we can't expect much. Well, do you know, if you think like that, it's because your Jesus is too small. Jesus is a great Jesus, and he's the Saviour of the world. And Revelation has that wonderful picture, doesn't it, where John is shown a glimpse of the future. The curtains are just drawn back for a few seconds, and he sees people from every tribe, every language, every nation. A number of believers so great that no one could count them, praising and worshipping the Lamb who was slain. That is the work that we are part of, us as believers. You are part of the worldwide church of Jesus Christ, which is growing at a phenomenal rate around the world. And that is an utter miracle. But did you look at yourself in the mirror this morning and say, you are a miracle? Did you? No? Well, you are! Well, she's blushing now. I'm very sorry. If you are a Christian, if you love Jesus, you are a miracle. You are a resurrection work of God's Holy Spirit, who has gripped you, who has taken you from the road to hell and put you on the road to heaven, who took you when you were spiritually dead and he made you spiritually alive. And it took the same power that rose Jesus from the dead to do a resurrection in your soul. You are a miracle. And the amazing thing is he's doing these miracles all around the world. So we're going to show you a video clip from Easter Sunday in Kathmandu. And they were just talking about bringing in an anti-conversion law in Nepal, where if you change your religion of birth, you will spend 2 years in prison. And if you baptize someone into a different religion, that's only pointed at the Christians, by the way, 6 years in prison, £5,000 fine. And yet, Easter Sunday morning, 30,000 Christians from all the different churches in Kathmandu at sunrise walked in all the different roads into the centre of Kathmandu. And in Ratna Park, in the centre of Kathmandu, we had a worship service. 30,000 Christians. In 1958, when Nepal was actually opened up and missionaries were allowed in, because until 1958 it was illegal, Friends of Nepal did a survey all through Nepal and they found 6 Nepali-speaking Christians. Now there are over 2 million. And it's nearly all Nepalis who've been converted in India and elsewhere, because they're like spread everywhere to try and find jobs, getting converted even in the Middle East, going back to Nepal and preaching the gospel to their own people. It is an amazing work. And so we're going to give you lots of little snapshots of what Jesus is doing in Nepal. So if you want to be encouraged, you know, we had pastors come to conferences. They'd had to walk 2 days to get to the nearest road and then 18 hours on a local bus to get to a training conference. To learn more about Jesus. It's just amazing things are happening. So please do come along. But amazing as Jesus' work is, and really encourages us, the work he does is nothing compared to how amazing he is. And that's what we're going to just concentrate on for a few minutes this morning. If we're still going at 1 o'clock, you'll have to forgive me. Because that'll still only be half a service for me, because we normally start at 9. And we were sat on the bottom of the steps at 10:30 here this morning, you know, because everyone turns up at least at half an hour, if not an hour before the service in India, and they're just milling around because they walk sort of 6, 7, 8, 9 kilometres to get to church. And, you know, our culture, we turn up at the last minute, don't we? But they do that because they just want to be with God's people. I want to spend as long as possible with God's people in God's presence. So how amazing is Jesus? Well, firstly, we hear that he is a God who is so lovingly persistent in his call to people like me and you. In the Western Mail a few years ago, there was an article, and at the time, it was in the Guinness Book of Records, the most persistent boyfriend in the world. He had asked this lady to, I can't remember which valley it was, but this was up in one of the valleys. He'd asked this lady to marry him over 138 times over a period of nearly 40 years. That's persistence. And in the end, she finally said yes. And the Western Mail reporter, this had got to the Western Mail, so the reporter went to see her and interviewed them. And this elderly couple were sat on the settee, in the front room in this little terrace. And the reporter said to the blushing bride, what made you change your mind? This was her answer. Well, in the end, he just wore me down. Over 130 marriage proposals over 40 years, and in the end, she finally said yes. Well, do you know, God is way more persistent than that man. And you get a little flavor of that in these verses. He says, come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why spend your money on what isn't bread and your labor on what doesn't satisfy? Listen to me. And eat what is good, and your soul will delight in the richest affair. Give ear, listen, and come to me. Hear me, that your soul may live. This is a picture of a Middle Eastern market, a bazaar. You know, we're so conditioned now by Tesco's and Sainsbury's and Morrison, and where it's quite quiet and you've just got, elevator music playing in the background. Perhaps they're pumping the smell of freshly baked bread or they rotisserie chickens around the stall, to make you buy stuff. Well, you walk out of our hospital compound and we're in a very rural area. We're in a small market town, and you walk out of the quietness of our missionary compound hospital and you're straight into the middle of the bazaar, the market. And that means there are hundreds of people who just spread a tarpaulin out on the floor and they're selling their few ladies' fingers that they've grown or some cauliflowers. And I tell you, you want cauliflowers, come to India. I tell you, they are like this and 20p. And or if mango season, the word for mango in Hindi is aam, A-A-M. The word for common is aam, A-A-M. And we couldn't work out why it's the same word. Well, when you get to Maine, it's the mango season. You understand why it's the same word, because mangoes are like dripping off virtually every tree. They're just so common. We won't buy mangoes in this country because, you pay a pound for each of them and they're as hard as bullets. We pay 20p a kilo in India. And, you get so fed up with them and they're nice and ripe and you can mulch them and add a tin of condensed milk to them and make fantastic mango ice cream. And they'll be selling a pile of mangoes. And there's hundreds of people. And India, is just people. Our state, 240 million plus, and that was in the last census, which is 3 years ago. 240 million people. There's just people everywhere. And because you need to sell what you've grown in order to have money to buy some food for that night's meal. You're competing. And so they're shouting, come and look at my goods. No. Come and look at my goods. I've got the juiciest mangoes. I've got the best cauliflowers. Come. Listen to what I'm saying. And that's what God does here. Amongst all the competing voices, He says, come, 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 come to me. Listen to me. Why did you come to church this morning? Well, I'm just a beaten up, battered old mobile phone. Yeah, when your mobile phone goes, do you go, hey, iPhone 7S. Oh, isn't it a beautiful phone? Oh, and look at all these lovely little apps I have on it. Now, what happens when your phone goes off? What do you do? Straight to your ear, and you listen to the person on the other end. Actually, the phone is not that important. What is important, what the phone is there for, is who is on the other end. That's what's important. Preachers, we're just the battered old mobile phones. But when we preach the gospel, when we preach the Bible, it is God speaking to us and through us as we open up the Bible. And God is speaking to you this morning, and he's saying, come, come, come to me. Listen to me. So please don't come to listen to Merv Neal. You will be bitterly disappointed. Come to listen to Jesus. Speak to your soul. He says, come, come, come. Listen to me. Listen to me. Hear me. Well, what has he got to say to you this morning? He says, come to me, all you who are thirsty. Come, all you who have no money. Come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money, without cost. Why spend money on what isn't bread and your labour on what doesn't satisfy? Listen, listen to me and eat what is good and your soul will delight in the richest of fare. Listen to me, come to me and your soul will live. Who's he talking to? He's talking to you if you feel empty and dissatisfied and hungry. You know there must be more to life than this. You know that even if you're a Christian, there must be more to Christian experience than what you already have. You're hungry for more. You're longing for more. You feel dry. You feel hungry. You feel empty. You feel dissatisfied. He says, come to me. Listen to me. Hey, this is a nice building since I was last here. Yeah, it's nice and light and airy now and nice comfy seats, isn't it? Hey, don't have to sit on pews anymore. That, you know, you wish after 20 minutes you could stand up because, you know, the circulation's been cut off to an important part of your body. You know, it's nice and night and light and airy, and perhaps you like coming because it's, well, now a nice, light, airy, and there's comfortable seats to fall asleep in while when the man's preaching. You know, no, don't come to church. Church will leave you empty, dissatisfied, hungry, thirsty. Why do you come to church? You come to church to meet with Jesus. He says, all you are thirsty, come to me. All you are hungry, come to me. Why do you spend your labor on what doesn't satisfy? I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Grew up in a rich family, learned to drive in my dad's Porsche. When he'd go away on holiday, I'd even drive his roller. Grew up in a Georgian mansion, shooting range under the cellars, a wine cellar, a secret tunnel from one of the cellars to the cellar of the pub opposite across the road. That was nice as a teenager. And I wanted to be like my dad when I was growing up. I wanted to be rich and I wanted to play first-class rugby. And straight from university, I got a job working for a merchant bank and a beautiful wife from Wales, a degree from Wales, played rugby for Moseley, then had my own business. Got everything I ever wanted. We used to go skiing twice a year. We used to have a nice summer holiday. Had a house built for us in Lincolnshire, and we hadn't even unpacked the boxes. And we were going, the next house we think will be Victorian and it'll be nice and it'll be in the countryside and they have paddocks so we can have ponies. I remember being in the airport in Austria, and because the flight was delayed and we hadn't even got home from our holiday and we were planning the next holiday. Why do you do that? You know, you dream about the car that you want, you know, and you get it, and then immediately you start to think about the next car. Or any mammals here? Middle-aged men in Lycra, you know, suddenly cycling has become the in thing for men of a certain age. Any mammals here? Too embarrassed to say no. You know, a load of my minister friends who are my age have suddenly taken up cycling while I've been in India. I tell you, that's a dodgy thing to do in India. That's guaranteed to kill you. I was talking to one of my friends and he said, I've been dreaming about having this titanium framed bike. And he said, and someone in the church bought one for me. He said, and immediately I saw an even better bike in the cycling magazine. You see, things cannot satisfy you. Jobs cannot satisfy you. A bigger house cannot satisfy you. A bigger bank balance cannot satisfy you. Why do you spend all your time and your energy and your efforts and your thoughts on what does not satisfy you? That's what Jesus says to you this morning. Why? Why do it? And I don't want you to do it. He says, so come to me. Come to me. Come to me. Listen to me. Listen to me. And your soul will delight in the richest of fare. Come to me and your soul will live. Oh, the world says, don't go to Jesus. Don't go to Jesus. He can never make you happy. He can never fill you. You'll never find fulfillment in there. Jesus is there to make your life boring. Jesus is there to make you miserable. Jesus, well, he's a nothing and a nobody anyway. He can't really help you. Come this way. Remember the old chorus? I don't know if you sing it anymore. I met Jesus at the crossroads where the two ways meet. Satan too was standing there and he said, lots and lots of pleasures I can give to you today. Hasn't changed, has it? You know? That's the way of the world. Don't go to Jesus. Don't go to Jesus. You might be at a real crossroads this morning. Jesus is trying to pull you one way and all your non-Christian mates and the world that you live in is trying to pull you the other way. Don't go to Jesus. He can't make you happy. You'll be really miserable. Your parents only bring you to church to make your life miserable and make you unhappy. It's all lies. Believe me. I fell for them for the first 28 years of my life. So one day I woke up and I was earning loads of money, living in a nice house that I'd had built for me. I'm driving my very flashy sports car. I've just had my name in the paper because I scored some tries on the Saturday. I've got a beautiful wife. I've got two lovely daughters. My youngest is 6 weeks old. And I'm driving to work. And the mist is just rising above the waters of the River Neen as I'm driving to work. And I thought, I hate my life. I've got everything I ever wanted. And I still feel empty. And I feel dirty because I've done things to get it that I'm ashamed of. What's the point of living? You might as well just floor the car 100 miles an hour straight into the river and finish it all. Because what's the point? And then I was like, oh, Merv, what a coward you are. That's the coward's way out. You're married. You've got children. What would they do without you? 2 weeks later, I gave my life to Jesus. And I've never felt empty since. Why? Because Jesus satisfies. Jesus makes you come alive. He makes your soul live, really live. The world says, oh, come to Jesus. Don't do that. Don't be so stupid. He'll ruin your life. That won't really be living. That's miserable. That's boring. Listen to what Jesus says. I have come that you may have life and have life to the full. The Christian life isn't a boring life. The Christian life is an amazing life. You now know the creator of the universe, the one who could speak and make the spiral nebula, the one who could speak and create the Milky Way and make things that are so awesomely, stunningly beautiful that you can look up at the night sky and it just takes your breath away. And the world says, oh, he's the one who spoils your fun. No, no, he gives you little glimpses and goes, see how great I am. We've just come back from doing CCIW camp. I thought I retired 3 years ago. But they brought me out of retirement to be chaplain. And I love that Cadair Idris Valley. I love waking up at 6:45 in the morning, blowing a gale, freezing cold, sticking your head out and just seeing God's adventure playground. So you can get into wetsuits and crash helmets and walk, climb into a waterfall and walk up the waterfalls for like 35, 40 minutes, and dive in the plunge pools and go kayaking and go walking up Cadair Idris. And he made it all for us to enjoy. Christianity is about spoiling your fun. Rubbish. 5 weeks on the back of a motorbike. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea in Nepal, but just seeing what Jesus is doing and spending time with Christians who they will give you everything because they're amazed that you've left the West and just want to encourage them in Jesus. And then getting to walk Annapurna. Not everyone's cup of tea again, I know. You know, 8 hours of walking for 7 days. Every day, 8 hours walking at altitude. Didn't have altitude sickness. The only time I really noticed was the night before we walked up to Annapurna base camp. We were at Machu Picchu base camp, which is 13,000 feet. And freezing cold, it's about -5. I turned over in bed. That's all I did in my sleeping bag. I'm at the age now where when you climb to the top of the stairs, your heart's going. You know that feeling? Yeah, it's like that when you turn over in bed at 13,000 feet. All I did was turn around in my sleeping bag and my heart's going. I'm like, whoa, this is a weird feeling. Big sucking big deep breaths. And like, oh, calm down, Merv. Yeah, you're just at altitude now. If you were in an aeroplane, you'd already be on oxygen. Because you have to have oxygen over 10,000 feet if you're flying. Like, whoa, oof. And then got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, walked up the glacier so we could see Annapurna at sunrise. And the sun just came over the mountains, over the high Himalayas. Because they're all 28,000 feet peaks all around there. And this beautiful rose red light just started to glint on the snow caps of these high Himalayas. And it just took your breath away. But it lifted you in worship. Not to worship the mountains. To worship the one who makes the mountains. To worship the one who sends the sunrise every morning. Jesus boring? Jesus come to spoil your fun? Jesus can't fill you? He's God. Of course he can fill you. And he's not some boring, ugly, spoil sport God. He's a God who is spectacularly beautiful and who says, I want to bless you. I'm a bit thick. I'm a bit slow. Been preaching now for 24 years, and I don't know how many times I read Genesis, and yet this week I was preaching through Genesis on camp, and I'd never noticed it before. There in chapter 2 when it says, and the Lord made man in his image, he made them male and female, he created them, in his image he created them, and he blessed them and said, go forth and multiply. Do you realize why God created you? Do you realize why Jesus created you? Because he wants to bless you. He's not a stingy, miserly God. He is the God of all blessings. And we sing it enough, don't we? Praise God from whom all. Do you believe that? Sorry, this is interactive. Do you really believe that? Praise God from whom all blessings flow. He wants to bless you. He doesn't want to spoil your fun. He doesn't want to make you feel empty. He doesn't want you to feel dirty and guilty and not like yourself. He wants to bless you. You're the one who makes yourself empty. You're the one who makes yourself feel dirty and guilty because you do things you shouldn't do. And he doesn't want you to be like that. So he says, come to me. Come to me. Listen to me. And your soul will delight in the richest affair. And your soul will live. You'll become really alive. Fully alive. The life that he created you to really live. It's the world that's not really living. It's very interesting. The guy who wrote Truman Show. You know, the Carey film. He's an anti-Christian, the guy who wrote that. And he wrote The Truman Show as a polemic against Christianity. Because, you know, here's Truman and he's not really living. It's all a farce. It's all pretend. And there's the director, you know, that Truman can't see, that's directing himself and keeping Truman trapped in this little film stage when there's life outside. And the writer is trying to say, you know, that's Christianity. It's not real. It's empty. It's pretend. And there's the director spoiling your fun. Actually, it's the other way around, isn't it? It's one of the most fantastic illustrations of the gospel you can be. You see, the world is the director saying, oh, no, you know, this is only what's real. This life in a little bubble without Jesus, without God, you in control. Outside that bubble is real life. And that real life is coming to Jesus. He says, just come to me. He says, I'll make an everlasting promise to you. I'll make an everlasting covenant with you. End of verse 3. My faithful love. That's the word hesed. Covenant love. Grace, we could say. I'll make an everlasting promise to you. My faithful love. My covenant love. My love that is based on my promise that I will never, ever, ever, ever break. My faithful love promised to David. It's the promise that in David's family would come the one who is the Son of God, who would take away all the sins of the world, who would die on a cross and then rise again. He says, this is all found in my Son, and it's because of my promise and my faithful love. And he's the one who will be a witness to the peoples. Witness means martyr. The word witness in Greek is martyr. And he says he's the one who will be a martyr. And that's what will be the witness of God's love to all the people. How much does Jesus love you? How much does God love you? You only have to go to one place. You go to the cross. How much does Jesus love you? How much does God love you? He loves you more than his own life. That's how much you're loved this morning. Because Jesus laid down his life for you. And that must mean that he loves you more than his own life. Because he died in your place. He died for you. This amazing, awesome Creator God, who is the Word of God the Father. From before the world began, he came. He was born in Bethlehem, in the city of David, of David's line, so he could go and die in your place, take hell in your place, be separated from the Father in your place, and then rise again for you. And he says, come to me. I am the answer to all your problems. And he will summon nations that don't know him, and they will run to him, because of the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, who has endowed you with splendor. I remember I was called to preach the day I was saved. And I remember sitting down, starting to read the Bible as a Christian of a day old. And I knew God was calling me to preach. I remember thinking, 27, 37, 47, 57, 67, possibly 77, 50 years talking about Jesus from one book? That's impossible! How am I going to do that? How do other guys do that? 50 years talking about one man from one book. It's not enough material. Oh, I couldn't have been further wrong. Ephesians talks about the unsearchable riches of Christ. That doesn't mean you can't know them. It means you can never get to the bottom of them. Jesus is so spectacularly wonderful. He is infinite. You can never fully get to grips with Jesus. He is so amazing. I've now been preaching for 25 years, and do you know, I still feel like a little boy who's gone to the beach for the first time. And I've taken off my shoes and socks, and I've rolled up my trousers, and I'm about ankle deep in the water. And that's about where I am in Jesus preaching. I'm about ankle deep. He is spectacularly amazing. You know, he's not a little Jesus you keep in a little Tupperware container and bring him out on a Sunday. You know, and there, little Jesus, you know, I've got you sussed now. I know everything about you. I don't need to learn anything more. Oh, no. He is God. He is infinite. He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and end. And all life comes from him, and all life is going to him. And you can't even know him unless he opens the eyes of your understanding, because he is way beyond your natural understanding. He is way beyond your wildest dreams. And he can satisfy you. He is splendid. He is beautiful. He is majestic. We were doing Hindi language course, and one of our teachers was a pastor's son, and a lovely Indian lad, and he always used to come to with us with spiritual questions. He said, I've got a spiritual question for you, but can I ask you after the lessons? So yeah, fine. So one day he said to me, after our Hindi lessons, how long were you married to Kim before you understood her? Only a non-married boy asks that question. I said, well, Arpit, I've been married to her 27 years and I still don't understand her. But I said, the Bible doesn't say that we need to understand our wives. It says we need to love them and give our lives for them. He went, oh. That's just my wife. Guys, do you understand your wife yet? Mm-mm. And that's just a human being. And you think you've got Jesus taped? You think you fully understand Jesus? If we can't even fully understand another human being, how can we fully understand the Son of God? He is endowed with splendor that is so amazing, so beautiful. Our tiny little minds just about get to scratch the surface, this side of heaven. So he says, come to me. Listen to me. Look how amazing I am. I can give you life. I can give you real life. I can fill you. Well, who's he talking to? And what do you got to do? Well, you've got to seek the Lord while he can be found. This side of death, you've got to come to him. He's calling you to come to him. So you have to come to him. You have to seek him. Seek the Lord while he can still be found. Call on him while he's near. He's already calling you. He's already coming seeking you. So you've got to run to him. And you've got to call on him. He's speaking to you. You start speaking to him. And who's he talking to? Really nice, respectable, middle-class people who are pillars of the community. No, who's he talking to? Let the wicked forsake his way, and the evil man his thoughts. Who's he talking to? People who are wicked and evil. They're the people he calls. He doesn't call people who think they're good enough. He doesn't call people who think, well, you know, yeah, I do a few bad things, but they're not really that bad. And, you know, ultimately, well, I do far more good things than bad things. So, you know, Jesus will look at all the good things I do and he'll let me in because of all the good things I do. No. You need to realize that however good you think you are, however good you feel you are, in God's eyes, you are evil and wicked. It says in Genesis, every inclination of the thoughts of man are only evil all the time. And you go, no, how can that be? I do good things. Well, on camp, we have Portaloos. And as chaplain, I used to be in charge of emptying all the chemical toilets every day. And literally, it is bucket and chuck it. It's just a bucket with a seat on it. And we have a great big septic tank, and you have to go and empty it all. And so imagine, you know, I've got my... This was fresh this morning, wasn't it? Yeah, this isn't last Sunday's, is it? Sometimes it is, you know, and there's dust on the top, and you take a mouthful and you go... Imagine I've got my nice Best Lantrisant tap water. And I just take my finger and I swill it in the chemical toilet. And I just let one drop go in my nice Lantrisant tap water. Do I drink it now? Why not? It's minging, isn't it? It's polluted. Every molecule now is polluted by the filth and the germs. That's what your sin does to you in God's eyes. Yeah, you do good things, but the bad things are not supposed to be there. And the bad things pollute and taint everything. So the Bible says that even our righteousnesses are like filthy rags. And that's what we're like. Do you know? And Jesus knows what you're like. You can't hide it from him. You don't even hide it from yourself some of the time, do you? Yeah. Don't you sometimes look in the mirror and think, if my wife ever found out what I am really like on the inside, that would be the end of my marriage. If my husband could hear my thoughts sometimes, he just never would want to be married to me. If my friends could hear my thoughts sometimes, they would never want to be my friends. And so we put on a big show, don't we? We pretend that we're somebody that we're not really. We're very good at it because we grow up like it. And it's all a big show. You portray an image. It might be the person you want to be, but it's not the person that you are. Do you know the amazing thing about Jesus? You don't have to pretend. He knows what you're like. And he still says, come to me. Isn't that amazing? He knows what you're like. He hears every evil thought. He knows every evil desire you have. He knows all about the life he gave you, and you haven't given any of it back to him. Because you were made by Jesus and for Jesus, it says in Colossians. And yet you've taken that life he gave you, and you have selfishly used it for yourself, and you've squandered it on yourself. And it hasn't made you feel good. It's left you feeling empty and guilty and dirty and dissatisfied. And he says, I know what you like. Come to me. Come to me. I've been a Christian 25 years. I still don't understand why Jesus loves me. Because I give him every reason not to love me. And the only answer I can come up with the Bible is grace. gives you what you don't deserve. He says, let the wicked, evil man, what have you got to do? If he's talking to you, seek the Lord while he can be found, call on him while he's near, let the wicked forsake his way and the evil man his thoughts. You've got to come to Jesus and say, Jesus, I don't like the person I am. I don't want to go my way any longer. Because it leaves me feeling empty and dirty and guilty and dissatisfied. Jesus, I don't want to be like this anymore. And Jesus, I don't even like my thoughts. I wish I could turn them off. I'm ashamed of them. Jesus, I don't even like my thoughts. Oh, that you would fill my life with your way. Oh, that you would fill my mind with your thoughts. That's how you've got to come to him. And what will he do? Let him turn to the Lord. And this is a promise of God. And this is a promise from the God who cannot lie. And he will have mercy on him. And to our God, for he will freely pardon. Come by wine and milk and bread without money, without cost. You see, you can't bargain with Jesus. You can't say, well, Jesus, you should accept me because I've done this, this, and this, and this, and this, and I haven't done that, 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 and that, and that. No, no, no. You just come to Jesus and you say, nothing in my hands I bring. Simply to your cross I cling. Jesus, I come to you as a guilty, empty sinner. Jesus, take me. Forgive me. Wash me. Cleanse me. Fill me. And he will. That's why it's the gospel. That's why it's good news for bad people. It's the gospel. That's why we should be filled with great joy and thanksgiving. Because he saves bad people. He fills empty people. He washes dirty people. He rescues people from the very brink of hell and takes them to heaven. And we don't deserve any of it. Well, how can he do that? That sounds too good to be true, doesn't it? You haven't got to do anything. You just got to come to him. And all you've got to say basically is, Jesus, I'm disqualified from all this, but you are my qualification. I don't deserve any of this. I can't buy it. I just come to you empty, dirty, guilty, and you say you're going to give it to me. I don't have to do anything. All I have to do is come to you and listen to you and trust you and not trust myself. That sounds too good to be true. And he says, ha ha, my thoughts aren't your thoughts. Neither are my ways your ways. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways. Do you get it? How high are the heavens above the earth? Well, they go on and on and on and on and on, don't they? They're almost endless. And God's saying, you try and measure the distance. They are light years apart. That's my ways compared to your ways. We live in a world where there is very little forgiveness and very little acceptance of people who are not like us, especially of our enemies. You know, more than half the country just voted along those lines. We don't want to be with people who are not like us. And God says, my ways are not your ways. My thoughts are not your thoughts. So the heavens are higher than the earth. So are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. So you just trust my ways and my thoughts. You just get rid of your ways and your thoughts and trust my ways and my thoughts. Well, why is he like this? And how can this be? He says, oh, right, okay. Here's the bottom line. Just as I speak from heaven and I send the rain to water the earth so it will bear fruit, that is what the work that my word does in sinners' lives. You come to me and you listen to me and it will bear fruit in your lives. You will be fruitful instead of fruitless. Your life will have an eternal, fruitful purpose. My word that goes from my mouth will not return to me empty, but will accomplish what I desire and achieve the purpose for which I send it. So instead of empty, you will be full. Instead of guilty, you will be forgiven. Instead of dissatisfied, you will be satisfied with the richest of things. Verse 12, and you will go out in joy and be led forth in peace. And the mountains and hills will burst into song before you. And all the trees of the fields will clap their hands. Instead of the thorn bush will grow the pine tree. Instead of briars, the myrtle will grow. This will be for the Lord's renowned, an everlasting sign which will not be destroyed. What's his ultimate purpose? It's to fill you. It's to make you fruitful. And it's to take you to the new heavens and the new earth. Do you know the chorus? These words are based on? Probably don't sing it very often anymore. It's an older chorus, isn't it? When we were in Nepal, a lot of people are illiterate. So you can't say, turn to Isaiah chapter 5 and chapter 55 and read verse 8. And you have to act it out before them, I tell you. But they might be illiterate, but they are so full of the joy of the Lord. Normally, as soon as the music starts, the old ladies, not the young children, the old ladies will be down here. They'll be at the front. They'll be dancing before the Lord, praising and clapping. They're just so full of the joy of the Lord that he has broken into their life. He has filled their emptiness and taken away their dirtiness. And he has given them a hope and a future and a reason to live. You will go out in joy and be led forth in peace. And the mountains and the hills will burst into song before you, and the trees of the field will clap their hands. Do you know, if the mountains are singing praise to Jesus because of what he's done for you, and the trees of the fields are clapping their hands because of what Jesus has done for you, fill in the gaps. How should you be? Oh, but we're in Wales. We don't do things like that. Some cultures are a little bit closer and freer to this. You go to churches in Africa, and I got a lovely video of a friend, one of the elders in Bethel, and he went to a Kenyan church, Pentecostal church, and they do what's called the Penti Shuffle. You see? The Nepali ladies just dancing, worshipping with all their being. You might go, well, I can't see myself doing that, not with my bad back and arthritis and dodgy knees and whatever, and I'm too embarrassed. I tell you, one day you will. Do you know, when Jesus comes back again and he leads you into the new heavens and the new earth, and the trees are clapping their hands and the mountains are singing for joy, so will you. That's what heaven's going to be like. It's full of praise, full of worship, full of adoration, full of joy, full of peace. And our lives should be first fruits. They should be little, you know, the starter, getting ready for the main thing to come. And you will be fruitful. You might not notice this, but this is a reverse of the curse. When Adam and Eve sinned and he says, through your hard work now, because the ground is cursed, you will toil all the days of your life. And instead of it giving what you expect, it will yield thorns and thistles, and by the sweat of your brow you will have to work, and you will never get back what you put in. And he says, if you come to me and you start listening to me and you forsake your ways and your words, and you listen to my ways and my words, I will make you fruitful, and I will reverse the curse. And instead of your life being empty, it will become fruitful. I've been a Christian for 25 years. I don't know how long you've been a Christian. Don't you want to be fruitful for Jesus? Don't you want to bear fruit for him? Because he deserves it, doesn't he? You know, he loved me when I didn't love him. He died for me when I was his enemy, when I was wicked and evil. He loved me and he died for me. He broke into my life 25 years ago. He called me to come to him as I was, not pretend, just as I was, a sinner. And I asked him to come into my life. And he did. Doesn't mean he takes all the problems away, does it? You still have great problems and difficulties and everything else. The amazing thing is he walks with you through all the difficulties and all the problems. Why would he want to do that? He was in heaven where there's no difficulties, no problems, and yet he left heaven not just to die for you, but to rise again and walk with you for all the filth and the muck and the disappointments and the dangers and all your mess ups. And he says, don't worry, I'm with you. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. I'll fill you. And every time you fall and end up dirty, I'll pick you up and I'll wash you and make you clean and take rid of the guilt, and I'll give you peace and I'll give you joy and I'll make you fruitful. But no, perhaps this used to be you as a Christian, and you fell and you messed up and you went away from Jesus. And the devil, ever since that day, has been whispering, well, yeah, go to church, but Jesus can never use you. You know, you'll be a third-class Christian for the rest of your life. And there'll be no joy, and there'll be no hope for you because you messed up so badly. Don't listen to Satan. Listen to Jesus. He says, come back to me, and I will make you live. And I will make you delight in the richest affair. And I will fill you with joy. And I will make you fruitful. Just come back to me and listen to me.